This week on Buzzkill, we continue the IT security series with Liam Cleary talking about personal security and how it relates not only to the security of yourself and your family, but your organization's data. We hope you enjoy this conversation as we traverse everything from Wi-Fi to social media and relate it all to the many important tools and techniques your organization should take advantage of. Here we go. Liam Cleary joining us today on Buzzkill. Super excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited too.
I told you it was going to be an awkward moment for us, but makes sense for everyone
else.
That's right.
So Liam, you are a well-known security expert in the community. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do in your day-to-day lives?
Yeah, maybe I have multiple lives. Who knows?
You could.
Superhero.
Yes. Yep, I have one name and then I have another name, but who knows? No, so on my day-to-day, most of my work is obviously I chose to heavily focus in Microsoft 365 and Azure. So a lot of the work I focus on is security assessments. That seems to be quite a popular thing I'm doing at the moment, which is validating somebody's existing tenant to make sure it meets all the best security capabilities that are available. On the other side of that, I also build lots of training courses. So I build training courses for LinkedIn, training courses for Pluralsight and a few others, and custom courses too. Basically, everything melds together into I end up building courses often around security and compliance and a few other bits and pieces. Almost those, that kind of voodoo dark art pieces of Microsoft 365 that nobody ever wants to talk about. That's where I live my life.
That sounds like a wonderful place, especially
it's
if no
magical.
One's talking
it's
about
magical.
It. Now, when I reached out to you, the story that I reached out to you about was something we had talked about years ago at a conference where you had gone and stood up a Wi-Fi and started capturing everyone and data and really you kind of messed with the hotel and everything potentially by mistake. We'll let you describe that. But
yes,
tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, so I was going through a phase in my life, we'll just call it that, where I was doing a lot of testing with Wi-Fi networks, and I was intrigued with the idea that people will just randomly connect to anything, especially in a hotel, and especially if it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was that I purchased a bunch of equipment, I threw it in my backpack and flew to San Francisco, where we stayed in a large hotel, and I was playing at the back of somebody's session in the conference and just configuring it because I wanted to use it a little bit later on. But what I'd actually done was configured it with the same name as the hotel Wi-Fi and then started broadcasting. And because my equipment was quite powerful, anybody within a certain range would automatically just connect to my Wi-Fi equipment, not the hotel's. And of course, that wouldn't have been an issue. Except obviously the speaker laptop connected to my machine, which meant that I couldn't then disconnect him in the middle of the presentation. So I had to kind of leave it going. So that wasn't the worst of it. The worst of it was I took it back upstairs to the room, was playing with it before we had an evening meal, had it broadcasting on the floor I was on, which was something like the 15th floor, and then went out to eat and completely forgot to turn everything off. And so I come back to the hotel, a couple of hours later, and see the hotel support team walking around with what looks like iPads and Wi-Fi dongles, clearly trying to figure out what's going on with the Wi-Fi because somebody's obviously impacted it, which obviously was me. Yeah, I have no idea who that was. So I remember I jumped in the lift and like shot up as fast as I could and like ran out of the room and like pulled the plug really fast. It's like, I shouldn't have left that running. But I tell you what, it was interesting because what I'd done is configured it in a way that it was the same name. And of course, as you may or may not know, most devices, they always ping out for the name of existing Wi-Fi network. So if your home network was called, Bob's Wi-Fi network, and I happened to create a Wi-Fi network called Bob's Wi-Fi network that didn't require a key, your machine or phone would just magically connect to it. It wouldn't even try to, it would pass me the key, but I wouldn't even do anything with it because I'd just be like, whatever, just connect. And at that point, I was able to then see what people were doing, what websites they were going to. And if I wanted to, not that I did, If I wanted to, I could decrypt the traffic and see what was going on inside the SSL traffic too. So, but there you go. It was a phase in my life.
So personal security lesson number one today.
Right.
Know what you're connecting to. And it is kind of scary to think about too. Like you said, you could decrypt the traffic. You could see everything they're mm-hmm. doing, passwords that they're sending. And really it comes down to if you're, I may or may not broadcast my SSID. And what you're telling me is someone could come by, pop something up, broadcast the same SSID, but shut off the security and start capturing all of my traffic as it goes through.
Yeah, correct. And it's by design in the actual devices. Like Windows does it too.
Yep.
So Windows, I mean, anything, it tries to do like a ping and say, hey, are you still there? Are you still there? And tries to look for the SSIDs. And if you have the right equipment, it doesn't even have to be expensive equipment. You can buy really simple, even spin up a virtual machine and connect it to just a Wi-Fi antenna, and you could basically replace the same thing. And of course, yeah, everyone just connects to it. And no one checks it. I mean, why would you? It looks like it's connected to your home network, so why would you question it?
And that's the thing, is that it's, and this gets into just like the specifics around the scenario that we're talking about. It's just not using default settings on the devices that you have, you know?
Correct.
There's like a huge thing with IoT. It's the same kind of concept where people leave the out-of-the-box passwords on their IoT devices, mm-hmm. and everyone in the world, like everybody that likes having fun on the internet, is connecting to these things to see, you know, people's personal video streams and like messing with the settings on their whatevers that are hooked up to the stuff in their home.
Yep.
You know, so the lesson is, don't just leave settings on default and understand how the devices that you have, right,
yep.
are using, especially if they yep. are connected to the internet. What's going on there, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is interesting, even for me, as the lesson that I've learned over the years, my personal machine that I use and my work machine, even though I connect to the Wi-Fi in my own house, none of my connections are set to automatic. So when I open the laptop up, it's not going to be connected to the internet. I have to click
right.
connect because right. I want to make sure that it is the right one.
Right.
Admittedly, I have lots of Wi-Fi networks at my house. So, and I also have hidden ones too that no one knows about.
Well, and speaking of like default settings, right? You were talking to us about school Chromebooks, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, that was a really interesting scenario. Why don't you go into that one too? Because I like one of the reasons that we're having you on, right? These are such great examples of these kinds of things, right? That we talked about.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can be anything to do with. There's school Chromebooks, it can be Surface Books, it can be anything that gets issued. But yeah, it is one of those things where the default settings are not often quite what they should be. And so the kids can figure out how to get around specific things. I mean, I remember having to have a conversation with, well, one, I had a conversation with my own son first, which we'll go into in a second. And then, and then I remember having to have a conversation with IT at the school
right.
and saying, hey, do you guys know? No, and the guys were like, well, why would they do that? And I was like, well, why would they not? I mean, that's the whole thing. That's what kids do. I mean, that's what adults do. I mean, I gave a session at a conference once and I asked a question. I said, okay, who's gone to an environment somewhere and saw shared folders on the network and just double clicked it to have a look?
Oh, yeah.
And then when it says access is denied, then you're more intrigued.
Yes.
But you're like, well, why is your access denied? And I said, but that's what happens with the kids.
Yeah.
I said, so what they do is like, you know, they were allowed to go to Facebook, you know, and then, you know, they would block the browser unless it was needed. And then the kids figured out that they could surf the internet in Facebook because Facebook yeah. lets you go to a URL, then they can get rid of it and type whatever. Or they were using proxy servers.
Yeah.
I mean, these are like middle school kids who were like, yeah, check it out, use this proxy server, it gets around everything. And sure enough, it did. And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
like why are they doing that?
Yeah. Well,
like, what are you possibly looking at?
Right.
Yeah.
And so we'll have another episode all about how to secure your phones, your kids' phones, right?
Yeah.
And then the other one that gets me that people don't do, so we talked about defaults, we talked about, you know, understanding how the technology works a little bit. Another one that really intrigues me is what people put on social media. So, you know, I joined a Facebook group about Disney because we're going to be going to Disney and okay. we want to learn some tips and tricks. But I'm watching people post like, we're driving from here to Disney on this day. We're leaving at this time. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're putting so much information out there. Like, you're giving away everything about you. Your house is going to be empty at this time. Yep. You're going to have your kids' names are Bill and Susie. Like, what are you doing with yourself?
But it's this interesting thing that I've had lots of conversations about, this idea of everyone likes to be private and likes to tell people that they want to be private and they don't want anybody, they don't want the governments to track anything. But if they put it out there, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody travels around with one of these devices.
Well, you can trust your friends in a Facebook group.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
they're people just like you.
Yeah, it is. It's like, it's just, okay, well, these people are clearly like-minded, so I'm going to tell them everything about me. I'm going to give them my credit card numbers, my date of birth, and also my social security number, just because.
Yes.
But it does. It's, I mean, it even goes even simpler into the fact that you have a cell phone. And you install an app and you have inherent trust in the app that you install. Now, Android does a better job than Apple does where it pops up and says, this phone, you know, this app requires these permissions.
I saw your look, Hunter.
Yeah. Apple hasn't.
Is it okay if this app takes your social security number, credit card number? And
yeah, that's right. It does. I mean, okay, if we bring it to the business side, it's like when you install an app into Microsoft 365, there's like a list of 57 million permissions it needs. And you're like, okay, yes. You know, and no one ever checks it. They're just like, okay, well, that's fine. We'll do that. Yeah. There's this inherent trust in I need that thing. So the greatest story for this was that weird app that came from Russia, which was the one where you could do something with your face.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you read the small print, which nobody ever read.
No.
But in the small print, it specifically said that when the photos were taken, which you took, that they were owned by the company in Russia and could be used for any purposes whatsoever.
And you know,
but
okay, so
it meant I could swap my face with a dog.
Yes,
guys, we're in the wrong business.
Yeah, I know. That's right.
That's all I have to say about that.
So for the people listening along, like, what do you think? What are they going to do with those faces that you may not think about?
So, I mean, the big thing right now is obviously most. I mean, you can read about it online. So most government entities are trying to get pools of people's faces to tweak. Machine learning, facial recognition, artificial intelligence to represent, you know, smiles, happies, whatever, all that kind of fun stuff. And so that's one side of it where it's that. The other side of it is then these people have pictures of you.
Yeah.
And who knows what you're doing in those pictures? I mean, let's be honest about it.
Totally
innocent. You know, totally innocent. Like I'm just smiling, hey, but you have no idea. I mean, you know what blows my mind is when you read the news and there's some famous person has had pictures of them leaked.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now just think that through. Like, why are we taking pictures like that? Like, and then why are we storing them on our phone? Like, if you are doing it, put them somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I have taken pictures and all of my photos automatically.
What are we about to talk about, Jay?
Yeah.
Am I gone again?
No.
But like when my wife was pregnant, you know, or when my kids were really young and she was breastfeeding and stuff.
Yeah.
We would take pictures that are for medical purpose to show to the doctor or whatever.
Yeah,
but like, you don't think about the fact that, hey, this is automatically uploading to whatever backup solution you're using, whether it's Google or Amazon or whatever. And there was this one point where our TV background was connected to Amazon's photo storage and it would be flipping through these photos. And one day we're sitting there and it's flipping through the photos and there's a photo of my wife nursing. And I'm like, Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. That wasn't the background I was looking for. I was looking for something different. I wanted the one where I'm dancing like a teddy. No.
Well, but that's not even to get into like things like geotagging,
yes,
right?
Correct.
And again, you know, like you said, synchronization of clouds, Because sometimes, you know, it depends if you're using a third-party app or not, but your cloud storage on your phone may be syncing to multiple destinations online on top of that, right?
Oh, correct. Yeah. I mean, that's the purpose of the cloud. It's like I tell people every day, just because you are putting stuff into that service,
yes,
that could be stored in 20 different data centers,
yep,
all over the place.
Yep.
And what, you know, you talk about the geo information, you know, every time you take a picture with your phone, it's storing geolocation in the picture as part of that, which means it's not just pinpointing, well, you took a picture in Virginia. It's going to say you took a picture at these GPS coordinates.
Yes.
So that's exactly where you were. Now, that's significantly more interesting. The idea of GPS coordinates tracking information in pictures that you could then identify and build a picture and say, okay, well, I know that, you know, Sue went and took a picture here and then went here and took a picture and took a picture here and then checked in on Facebook here and then took a picture. So you can see this kind of pattern that we can, yeah, build of like where somebody's been or going.
And this goes into, well, I was going to say, I also want to touch on really quick something that you talked about when you were explaining your Wi-Fi story.
Mm-hmm.
Links back to IoT devices and uploading all this personal information.
Yeah.
There are still a lot of storage, not a lot, but there are some websites and some storage locations that are not always sending encrypted signals where it's,
correct,
just like HTTP. And that's especially a big deal with IoT devices. A lot of them, you know, in order to have that S on there, they've got to have some kind of encryption server or encryption built into the end device itself. And companies are not taking the time to make that happen. They're just assuming that your Wi-Fi is going to be under a firewall, but anybody that can get, mm-hmm, to that IoT device can get that information, right? And like people, again, like default passwords, default settings on devices, there's a lot of things that we do day to day that, or that a lot of people do day to day, that are very passive. And the point is that we're reaching this new age where we have to think about these things proactively. That's one of the reasons that we're talking about this, because, and this is where we kind of draw it back, Liam, and something that we'd like to ask you about too. This draws back to the organization, right? To business, mm-hmm, organizations, to public sector organizations. It's like,
yep,
you know, when we talk about somebody maybe allowing credentials to their personal devices, getting out there, people being able to access information on personal devices through unencrypted networks and accidental connections to Wi-Fi, this can have significant ramifications for organizations, right? So can you talk a little bit about that as well as what IT can do to help educate and prep the people that work in their organizations around these things, right?
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, that is, it's, I've read a few articles over the past year, 18 months, because of course, in effect, we're all remote workers now. You know, this idea that we go to an office, sit on a corporate network, it's nice and secure because it's in a building, you know, that's kind of gone now, because, yeah, we're all sitting at home and I'm using a phone, an iPad, I'm using my Mac laptop, I've got a Windows machine, I've got a Linux machine, I'm using all different devices and I flick between them and my kids are on with Chromebooks and my wife's got a machine. But we're all really completely independent of each other, and we're just separate, independent devices that are connected. Now, from a corporate perspective, you would like to think, now this is where my security assessment, for example, comes in, when we do assessments and look at them and say, hey, you guys have no control over what happens on, you know, Jay's phone, for example. So when he opens up, let's say he's using, you know, let's go with the Microsoft 365 as the idea. So, you know, Jay downloads the OneDrive app on his phone and he wants to get his work stuff on his phone while he's on the move, which makes complete business sense.
Yep.
So that's what Jay does. He just does it and downloads the whole thing. Then, of course, his phone gets infected with malware. And then before you know it, that malware is then able to go into the OneDrive app and download all the files that are from the company because nothing was protected. So how does your organization do that? Well, then we go back to almost old school technology. We go to mobile device management, we mobile protection, we are looking at what would be the new version, so MAM, so mobile application policies. So we're now creating a policy specifically for apps that we wish to control. And we do that by using whatever the account is for login. So let's say it's an Azure AD account. We provide a encryption policy, a control policy that says, hey, when Jay puts that app on his phone, one, he can do it. Two, he can download. But three, it's encrypted. And four, he can't copy stuff in and out of those apps at all. It's completely controlled via the organization, even though it's a personal device.
Lock it down.
That's right.
Lock it down. That's it.
And it's a BYOD device. I mean, it's not that you're managing everything, because so my previous employer that I used to work for, in order for us to get email on our phone, there was no policies. We basically had to agree to something and sign it on a piece of paper that said, like,
oh my God,
we'll be okay. But that's changed now. Now they have policies and all that kind of stuff. And then when you connect now, it now says we'd like to manage your phone, and you agree to specific things. And so I think what you as the end user has to do is come to an understanding of, if you would like to use your personal devices, i.e. the ones that the company don't provide you, then there's some things that you need to acknowledge and understand. And I have to do that as a user and say, I'm okay with you forcing me to authenticate to get into the app. I'm okay with being restricted from copying information from that location into anything else. I'm okay with you encrypting my content, because in the event of Jay's phone having malware on it.
Whoa. Why do we keep
I mean, honestly, I mean, it's not
I love
that
your example. It was like a granted. You're like, of course he's going to get malware on it.
Yeah,
phone.
Of course Jay's going to have malware on there. Right. And of course, if he does, then the company, let's be realistic about it, if the company has policies in place and for some reason something happens on Jay's phone, it's not the company that has the problem. It's going to be Jay, because Jay, something that he shouldn't have. So there's an element of liability there that they're trying to handle as well. So we live in a litigious world, so we need to kind of accept that that's where that comes from.
Well, and it's funny, because that's one of the things that I talk about a lot with security and with customers talking about governance and access and adoption. It's like, look, you need to make sure you have some kind of coverage. Like, yes, you want to secure things down and you want to make your data secure, but you also need to have something that says, this is everything we did in order to secure it. Yeah. And this is our audit trail, our CYA, our cover your ass, right?
Like,
absolutely.
No, but that's perfect.
Also, AvePoint IT, I promise, I'm not doing anything.
totally. We obey all of our policies.
Every single policy. Yep. Nobody ever installs anything that they shouldn't do or does whatever. That's so, right. I got involved in there was a Microsoft 365 tenant that got breached. Okay. Mm-hmm. It wasn't breached by anybody in the organization. It was actually breached by a vendor credential. The vendor was breached, and somehow they'd written down the admin credentials to the tenant of the other company. Now So this wouldn't have been an issue, except it was a health organization too. So this becomes a bit of a more critical problem.
So I
go in to have a chat with them, and they obviously want us to have a look at what's been going on. So I said, okay, well, let's just open up the audit log and let's have a look. And I open the audit log, and it still says, would you like to enable user and admin activity login? So nothing's being captured because nobody's turned it on. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's try this one. Have we got this one? Well, no, we haven't got that. Oh, no, we haven't got that. And I'm like, okay, well, have fun, because there's nothing I can get out of it apart from calling up Microsoft at this point and saying, hey, can we have something to help us? They hadn't enabled anything. There was no control, no protection. There was no audit trail, no nothing.
This goes back to, like, don't leave things on. So it's not just a personal thing, right? Even the organization, don't leave it on default settings. Understand, this is a big thing in our industry. And Jay and I deal with this all the time. Just because you're in the cloud doesn't mean you have what you think you have automatically. Like,
it's software too, right?
Yeah. Like, you've got to turn the thing on, or you might have to buy another thing to go with the thing that you've got to make it do what you think. You can't make assumptions.
And
you know,
the level of abstraction in your example was just mind blowing.
Jay, listen, I'm a big picture guy. Okay. I'm a big
picture guy. Right.
No, but seriously, you can't make assumptions is the bottom line of what the software that you have is doing. And if you don't have, like, listen to me, everybody listening to this, right? If you don't have an IT person and you're making security assumptions about your cloud software, take a step back.
We've got a consultant for you.
Liam.
Yeah, see, I wrote the community document on the Microsoft documents called the Basic Security Setup for Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
That specifically came because of a conversation that I'd had with a few clients, and then me and Mark were sitting, and Mark said, hey, we've got this idea. What do you think? And I'm like, perfect. Because I just had a chat with the Microsoft documentation team and said what they're missing in the documentation is true scenario type.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been able to go back and say, I am customer A. I have this requirement. What would I even use and what do I look at? And yep. So that's why I wrote that. And that's why also at the end of all of my security sessions, I have one slide. It just says, pay the money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've got to invest in it.
Just pay the money. Buy the licenses. Pay the money. Stop telling me you don't want to spend $7 extra a month. Just buy the licenses. Trust me, $7 extra versus a legal suit because there was an e-discovery and you were at fault.
What was it? I was just having this conversation at work, and I forget exactly what the scenario was, but I think it was data spill, security related.
Yep.
And the company spent $900 million in legal fees to handle the security flaw, and then settled a $200 million court. So $1.1 million because they refused to secure their content. Like, this is a return on investment.
But here's my one for you. This is probably going to come out wrong, but this for me has been a cultural thing. Specifically, I can say this because I'm not a US citizen. So this for me is a cultural thing. So I came from the UK. Mm-hmm. In the UK, when you went to a restaurant, you never gave your card to anybody. They bought you a terminal, you pop your card in, they never touched it, everything. Yep. And then I moved to the States and I went to a restaurant and some spotty teenager who'd served me asked me for my credit card and I gave it to him and he wandered off in the back.
Yeah.
And I sat there going, where's he going with my credit card? Like I was expecting to suddenly get alerts of like he's buying himself new shoes and a shirt and, you know, whatever else. But it's taken years for the US as a country to kind of catch up. And do you know what the change was? The hack at Target.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was it. That was the fundamental shift in everybody suddenly going, ooh, we need to take security a little bit. You mess with Target. They don't mess with Target at all. There's no way. You know, and it was as soon as they messed with that and it was point of terminals, like, and they were scanning, I was a victim of that. The one day I went to Target and didn't use my Target card, I used my Chase card. Within an hour, I had somebody trying to buy clothes, $1,000 worth of clothes from Ralph Lauren.
Wow.
I never spent $1,000 on clothes ever. So that doesn't. So I knew that clearly wasn't me.
Somebody on my. I'm a pretty secure guy. I only do encrypted stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very cautious that we write the CID on the back of our credit cards and everything.
Yep. Yeah.
I got a pizza order delivery yesterday. My card shut off. Yeah. Somebody ordered a pizza from Pizza Hut. In Alabama.
No.
So here's the best one.
I don't think I've been there. So it you know, you don't know how it happens sometimes, right? And you can be secure. But the thing is, as an organization, the more you concentrate on this kind of security, especially on your end user devices, the more steps you take, the less those fines are going to be.
Yep.
Because if you've taken the appropriate steps and something happens anyway, you've got this trail of things that you did that you can show. Listen, I did everything that the legislation calls for and we still got slammed, right? That is still a huge defense against this. If you're individuals, though, when we're talking about personal security, you're like, well, I'm not going to be subject to a multi-$1 million lawsuit. Yeah, but if you tell everyone in a 10,000 person Facebook group the day that you're leaving in the name of your kids and you know, you leave a photo that has a geotag that you're not aware of in that Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to rob your house. Like, it's a very likely scenario. And these things happen all the time. So raising awareness of this for organizations, for individuals, and from organizations looking at the perspective of the individuals, you know, from a organizational perspective, it will do you good to make sure that your users are aware of these kinds of things, that they need to be cautious about what they put on social media, that they need to be cautious of the default settings on their devices, what networks they connect to, making sure login information and their credit cards and stuff are secure over networks. Very, very important stuff.
Yep. But that does take time to kind of understand that. And it has taken quite a few years for lots of organizations to, and actually right now is a perfect time.
Yeah.
I'm seeing lots more organizations are now starting to worry and are now starting to implement
all these people working from home.
Yeah, I know. That's right. It's like, well, I can't see them anymore. They're now sitting somewhere on some network somewhere. We don't know what's on the other end. And often they don't even know what devices they're coming in from.
Yeah.
And so lots of organizations have now been kind of, I've had lots of conversations and like, okay, so this is what we should be looking at. Should be looking at this. Maybe think about this. Maybe what about this? What about that? And what's nice is that organizations are slowly starting to realize the power that comes from utilizing cloud components. So that doesn't necessarily mean to move everything to the cloud, because,
you know,
thinking the cloud's more secure really is a weird way of thinking of it. It's just, well, actually, we've got technology in the cloud that's more available than I could ever make it. So that's what we're going to do. So now we're going to use things like Defender components if we're using Windows or put it on a Mac or whatever else. And now we can remotely start to inspect executables that run and things like this and start to capture information.
Yep.
And that's only going to make it better. And I think the longer this work at home kind of continues, and maybe this is the future, I don't know, maybe this is significantly more the future for most of us, that we'll start to see a lot more of that, where organizations are willing to put investments in place. And then we just need to not fight against it. That's the issue. You know,
it's you're absolutely right. It's twofold, right? And that's why this is a buzzkill episode, is that you've got the one hand, the person unwilling to comply. And I remember when I worked for a federal consulting firm, which, I mean, I'm not saying the name, but you can look at my LinkedIn and there it is. And I remember when they turned on MDM, right? They turned on MDM and everyone freaked out and they're like, oh, I'm taking email off my phone because they can lock my phone down. I'm like, they're just trying to secure your data. Like, do you understand what you don't understand?
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem is
the
user doesn't understand. There's no communication and there's very little, you know, the company spends the least amount possible to procure the technology, to deploy the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got both of those sides, the person understanding themselves, the company spending the money on it. Both of those need to be fixed, which is why I was really excited to have this conversation to span from, you know, talking about your kids, you know, hacking the Facebook link all the way to the IT organization understanding what's possible with their technology. I think this has been a lot of fun. This has been exactly the conversation I was hoping for.
No, good. Yeah. And it's, you know what, and it's just interesting because it has taken so much time and effort to get here, and it will continue to be a bit more complicated, but you'll start to see changes that will come. Yeah. I mean, you'll still be able to go to like a good website to go to if you get bored one day would be Shodan HQ. Just go and look for connected devices. And if you get bored, I'll give you a quick 2 second what I did for this. I was in Barcelona presenting at a conference and talking about security, and I thought it would be fun to find an IoT device somewhere in the world and put it on the screen just to kind of prove a point. So I found a camera in somebody's house that was, go back to what Hunter said, default credentials, because of course you look at it, it says this is the model. So you go online, you find the user manual, get the admin account, make sure it works. So the idea was to kind of portray what could happen, put it up on the screen. What are the odds that the camera was overlooking the bed in the bedroom?
Oh no.
So I just put it in the corner up here and left it. And I just said, we're going to start the session. Just ignore the camera. I don't know what's going to happen. Could be, I don't know. There's clearly people in the bed, so I don't know what's going to go on, but we'll give it a go. See what happens. And so I left it and it was perfectly fine. But the logic behind it was, and they were like, well, what did you do? I said, technically, there was no hacking that took place. Because it was authenticated. Now, it's a bit of a gray line. I did have a conversation with some guys from multiple agencies. Let's just leave it as that. And it's a bit of a gray area. But like fundamentally, no one was hacking. You just left everything as default. And so anybody with an ounce of power and logic can just go online and go, I'm looking for this type of camera, these credentials, log in, good to go.
This is what the middle school kids are actually doing on those proxy servers.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Looking for weird webcams. In people. I did find one in Florida once that overlooked the backyard by the pool. And I was like, we'll leave that one going.
Yeah. Liam, this was perfect conversation. Again, this is exactly the information we were looking to get. We really appreciate your time, man. Did you have any other like closing thoughts about this or kind of the bottom line advice for people? You know, we've covered, and I should sum this up, right? We've covered, like, listen, there's a lot of scenarios all over the place that personal security covers, right? From the IT to individuals and the organization. Yep. But it's really, it's not only worth it, it's almost a must to take the time to spend money for tools or make sure you at least already have the tools with licenses that you have. Tweak them to make sure you're getting the bang for your buck and securing things. And number two, that change management, the education for your users needs to be an ongoing and clearly communicated process.
Correct.
Liam, did you have any other kind of a bottom line for thoughts for this?
I suppose the bottom line would be, it's a silly phrase, but be part of the solution, not the problem.
Yep.
And so, and that goes for you as the owner of a company, you as the user, the employee, you as the person at home. Be part of the solution by letting the administration take place, letting the security controls be in place. And I always try to tell people when I'm teaching them, I'm going to say, just think about it. You wouldn't let your kids go outside and play chicken across the highway just because they wanted to.
Right.
You know, you would tell them that was really silly and you would say you're not going to do that. And you invest in all kinds of money when the kids are babies to make the house proof so they don't hurt themselves and everything else. And then as an adult, you get a phone and you start taking weird photos and posting stuff all over the place, which is just the same.
Hunter, why are you doing this?
Yeah. Oh, we're going for Hunter this time. Just say like be part of the solution, be better. Like as an adult, as a parent, teach your kids to be better with social media. Teach them how to be secure on those devices. I've learned with my own kids that as much as I'm great at enforcing policy and restrictions and controls, that my kids fight against it and will try and find ways around it. Instead of doing that, sit down, have an open conversation, just as you would if you were trying to speak to your employees. Have an open conversation and say, this is the reason why we're doing it. This is what it's for. And then it becomes a joint effort. If it's a joint effort between mom and dad or dad and the company he works for or mom and the company she works for, then it's going to work. Otherwise, it's going to fail. And I've seen too many organizations fail at it because they just go, we will block you and secure you. And then it never works ever.
Right.
I'm waiting for the book, A Lesson in IT, What I Learned by Raising My Children. That's
right. Yeah, that's right. My lesson is I would never have given my daughter a phone when she was 14.
Yeah. My 8-year-old that's a great lesson. Constantly, I want a phone. I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, I know. I would have gone back and said, yes, you can have a phone. It's one that's got two buttons on it. One that says, call mom, call dad. That's nice. It.
That's it.
That's how you're 30. You the ability to
yeah,
hang
that's
it up.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much again, Liam. Really appreciate
your time. Thank you for having us.
And, it's a great conversation, and maybe we'll have you back, man. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
See ya.
Before we forget to say it, you know, at the end of the episode, feel free to leave any comments below as you're watching. Share it out on platforms and ask us any questions. More than happy to engage and look forward to that as well. If you agree with any of the sentiments or have any other examples in there, definitely leave those in the comments below. And also, if you have any disagreements, right? Anything that
we want to know where you disagree with how brilliant we are. It's okay. My ego can handle it. And in all seriousness, subscribe. If you want to hear more conversations like this, whether it's our upcoming interviews with Dana Simberkoff about the intersection with privacy and security, or Stephanie Donahue about identity and how organizations need to consider security and identity. Like, we've got some really fun conversations coming up. We're doing our best to make a topic that is generally boring, really exciting and something you want to hear about. So subscribe and hear more and click like and share with your friends. Send it to your grandmother. Who cares? She needs to know. She does.
She does. She does.
Goodbye.